Hey, welcome back. We had a really great discussion last week with Jason McIntyre about 2019 and the things that really caught our eye about culture and movies and books and music. And as usual, we had more things to say than time to say it. So we got two episodes here, and this is the second episode of that discussion, and I hope you'll tune in. There's some really fun stuff coming up here on this interview, and we'll just join it now in progress. Well, now we have Picard coming up, like next week, as of this recording.
Yes.
Are you going to watch that?
Yes. I've been excited about this one since Patrick Stewart, Sir Patrick Stewart, announced it at one of those comic conventions or wherever it was. And I'm sadly, I'm still going to watch it, but sadly, as January moves along here, I'm hearing mixed things about it, and I'm saying to myself, just stay the course, watch it, make up your own mind, don't follow the sheep. But I have been hearing, you know, things that are not great about it, so that has me a little concerned, because I love the character, and I really want it to be worth it for Patrick Stewart to come back and do a show about this character, you know. And if it's not worth it, that's going to feel a bit like a knife, I think. And so we'll see. I mean, I'll watch
it. There's no point saying any more about that, because I agree with you, other than just to say that it bothers me somewhat that it's basically the same crew, you know, that's created Discovery. But Stewart has a hand in it, obviously. Now, some people might say, well, good. Well, okay, but remember, Stewart also was the one who was like, I'm tired of Picard being so thoughtful and all this. I want to be an action hero. And that's why he's an action hero in all the movies. And I think that's mixed results, frankly. And thankfully now he's nearly 80 years old and he can't be an action hero. So maybe we're back to the thoughtful, pensive Picard, but we'll see. So there's that. Moving right along, because we are going long here, as we are due. Is there some music that stood out for you in 2019?
I think it's, as I've mentioned to you, I didn't listen to a lot of new music in 2019. I was listening to a lot of old stuff. I was listening to show tunes. I was listening to movie soundtracks. And I was listening to my kids' music. I don't know if you find this with your daughter, is that my daughter will hear something somewhere and want me to get it for her. So I'll buy it for her. And so it'll be on all of our devices. So then this year I discovered, and you're going to laugh, and that's fine, I discovered that I actually really like Taylor Swift. She's a delight. She's writing a lot of her own music, and it's just straight ahead pop music, and there's nothing wrong with that. And it's I think part of the reason there's an appeal is because my daughter and I can listen to it in the car together. And, you know, we have that common thing now. So there's that. There's speaking of my daughter's music, Camila Cabello, I think I'm saying it right. She put out a record about a month ago. It's really good pop music. It's really like just fun stuff that, you know, my daughter's bopping along to in the back of the car. So it's fun. But what about you? Anything stick out for you?
Same. I listen to a lot of my daughter when she's in the car. She gets the radio. That says a lot about how I love my daughter to give up the radio. But I listen to a lot of the pop that she likes too. And what I love though is this still happens. If she gets in the car, she doesn't usually, if she hears something she knows I love, she doesn't ask me to change it right away. And then I'll catch her singing along. She was singing along, this is weird, to Synchronicity 2 the other day.
That's the best.
Like, oh my God, that's
the best.
So, you know what I've been listening to? Same with you. I have listened to some new stuff. I won't go into it here. There's just bits and pieces. But two things. Big Tiki revival. You and
I've
me
been
both.
Listening
we're
to Tiki
listening to a lot
year,
of Martin Denny. Yeah, a lot of Martin Denny. There's so many. If you're not listening to the Quiet Village radio, you can find it on satellite or podcast. Go to the podcast, Quiet Village. You owe it to yourself. It's not just great background music. It's just music. It's unusual and it's good. But I've been really, really, really listening to Big Country, the Scottish band from the 80s and 90s. Stuart Adamson, who unfortunately, tragically took his own life about 18 years ago now, or something like that. One of the most brilliant songwriters ever, and don't take my word for it, folks. The Edge from U2 said so at Stewart's memorial service. He said something along the lines of, He wrote songs you two wished they could. And I would just tell you, if you're not listening to the 13 Valleys, Chance, Ships, I would just advise anybody who likes good lyrics and really good music and performing to look up Big Country and the tragic story of Stuart Adamson. But he has been taking up a lot of space in my life, my music life this year, and I don't regret it a bit. He's great. I'm looking forward to some new Colin Hay stuff coming up and some new Sting, I think. And sometimes, like you and I said, we got to look back a little bit. You know, we don't have to. We get our share of new stuff with the kids, but it's good for us to look back. And I like Big Country because I was a fan of theirs back in the day, but I probably was only really enjoying like one album. So now I've really dug deep, and it's really important to me. So
that is awesome. Like I love when an artist will come out with something new, and that kind of makes me go back and look at their old stuff that I maybe haven't heard in a while, or maybe didn't know about, like Nathaniel Rateliff.
Yeah, and the Night Sweats.
Nathaniel Rateliff and the Night Sweats. He has a solo album coming out, and his first single came out, I think, a couple of weeks ago. It's a fantastic song. So then that caused me to go back and listen to all the Night Sweats albums that I haven't heard in a couple of years. They're fantastic. Pete Yorn has a new album that came out, I think, about 2 months-ish or 3 months ago. That's a great album. So, of course, I go back and listen to his whole catalog. There's a show that you and I are probably going to discuss in a minute called Mr. Mercedes.
Yes.
And I can't recall if the theme song in season 3, which came out in 2019, is the same as the other seasons, because I didn't go back and rewatch.
No, it isn't.
It isn't, is it?
It's Bob Dylan, isn't it?
It is. And so I'm like, I really dig this Bob Dylan tune. I've never heard it. I've never heard it before. And I go back and I find out it's a B-side. And I said to myself, what is it that I like about this song? Because it's Bob Dylan, but it's not quite Bob Dylan. And I'm thinking, this sounds like if Bob Dylan and U2 and maybe The Edge got in the studio together and made a song, recorded a song. And so I go and look into it. It's called A Series of Dreams. It's a B-side from an album that was produced by U2's longtime producer, Daniel Lanois. And I'm like, well, that's why it sounds like you two and Bob Dylan got in the studio together. Anyway, so that has kind of caused me to go back and listen to all my favorite Bob Dylan albums the last few months.
You know, I was blessed this last year. I not only saw the aforementioned Pete Yorn, I saw finally Bob Dylan in concert.
That's right.
I went by myself to see Bob Dylan. My wife's turned me on to Pete Yorn years ago. So when Pete's in town, we try to go. And I'm very excited about 2 weeks from now, maybe three, finally a lifelong desire to see the great Lyle Lovett will come true, because we have tickets to Lyle Lovett in February. So
awesome.
I love Lyle's approach to country. He's more old style country, which I like. I'm not a big fan of the current crop. Not saying it's bad, it's just not for me.
I'm with you. I mean, give me a Hank Williams Jr.
Oh, yeah.
Or even senior. And give me Johnny Cash, probably. I think that's probably one of the reasons that Taylor Swift, not to bring her up incessantly, but like I just always thought of her as like a teeny bopper modern country singer. And I think she initially started in country, right?
I don't know.
And so now she just embraced the pop side, and it's good. Other albums or artists I was listening to: Donovan Woods, Haim of Monsters and Men came out with a great album this year. Folly and the Hunter is a great Canadian band. They're no longer, but
they broke up, right?
They did.
Okay.
I think that's kind of all I had in mind. Sharon Van Etten was an artist I discovered this year. She's been around forever, apparently, but she had a great album come out in 2019, which I loved. Oh, look it up, people.
I will look that up. We're kind of closing out here real quick. We're getting into the lightning round here. Books, I will tell you, I got a great book for Christmas. I'm a big Gary Shandling fan, who we did lose a couple years ago. I got his book, and what it was Judd Apatow basically was the conservator of what Gary left behind. Gary didn't have any heirs or anybody close to him, like a wife or a girlfriend at the time. And he had all these notebooks from ever since he was a child, letters, notebooks. And this book, he put together this wonderful book with photos and interviews, and it's phenomenal. It's this wonderful Gary Shandling epilogue of his life, and Apatow did a really nice job putting it together, and I consumed it in like a day. It was just, I just kept reading it, so I I recommend that book very much if you're a Gary Shandling or comedy fan. And I also recommend to the Jerry Seinfeld driving comedians in cars, getting coffee, the episode with Gary. It's eerie because the very last thing Gary says is basically joking about how he's going to die. He died not too long after that was filmed. Poor Gary. But a great book. I also got a lot of Jim Harrison books for Christmas, too. He is a gourmand, and he's a food writer, and he's a raconteur. He also did write a screenplay of a movie, The Legends of the Fall. He was that guy. Yeah, interesting guy. I'd read a lot of his stuff from the library, and my in-laws actually got me a couple of collections of his essays and interviews. So I'm going to be diving into that soon. And I also read A Warning by Anonymous, which was the alleged, I assume it's not alleged, person who is in the Trump administration but is anonymously telling tales about what goes on. And it's a terrifying read, but I got to admit, after about halfway reading it, I was like, okay, this is basically just a long list of really obnoxious stuff that happens and scary stuff that happens, and then a lot of moralizing from this writer who didn't even have the courage to put their name on the book. So that's how I felt about that book.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. What about you? Now those are some nonfiction reads, basically. Fiction-wise, though, I kind of took a break on fiction last year, to be honest with you, because I was writing more, and I have a hard time reading fiction while I'm writing fiction.
I'm the same exact way. And I also am kind of looking back at my reads for the year. There's not a lot of fiction on it. Nonfiction-wise, I like the Tim Cook biography by Leandre Cani. I Am C-3PO by Anthony Daniels.
How was that?
I'm still reading it, but I'm enjoying it. It's
okay.
You know, it's just more like a set of snapshots of history from a certain point of view. And yes, that was a deliberate line from Star Wars.
Yes, point of view.
I'm just enjoying his point of view on something that we all kind of took for granted growing up watching these movies. So yeah, that was good. What else here? Fiction wise, I read the Strange Weather collection by Joe Hill, four short novels. Really dug that. He's a good writer. I haven't really been able to get into his long stuff yet, which I know is sacrilege to Joe Hill, Stephen King fans, but I'll keep trying.
You read The Outsider, right?
I read The Outsider. I want to say, did that come out in 2019?
I don't know. I thought that's when I read it. Maybe it's not when it came out.
I seem to remember reading that over the summer of 2018, but I could be wrong.
Gosh, time moves so fast.
I mostly liked The Outsider. I found...
Yeah, you and I agree. I think here it goes. Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, two things. I found the pacing to be didn't provide as much tension as I think it could have. I think it kind of some of the air was let out as it went along. I think it could have been shorter, which is a criticism King gets a lot. And the ending kind of fell apart for me.
Okay, just hold that thought. I totally agree. So I watched It Part Two. Yep. Did you see
that?
Yeah. And the character that's loosely based on King, I think the writer. Yeah. What was the joke? You don't know how to finish. You don't know how to write an ending. Which is it's King talking about himself, because everybody says that about King. You know, it falls apart at the end. He doesn't write good endings, and I totally agree. By the way, that movie, a little overly long, I don't know. It wasn't. I thought the first one was scarier.
I thought it was scarier. I thought it was better done.
The second
the first. About It? Yes.
Yes, about It.
Part two of It was... not as good. Not as good. Still worth it to watch.
I thought Bill Hader was great.
Yeah, me too. I thought the whole cast was great in both. The kids were like phenomenal young actors, and they assembled the right people to do the grown-up versions, I think.
The young lady, she was in a great Nancy
Drew movie. Yeah, she was.
And that I just, it's a shame they aren't going to make more. And apparently that movie was kind of just abandoned and not marketed well, but it was a good little movie.
It was Sophie Lillis.
Watched it with my daughter. She was great. She's got real charisma.
Yeah,
she's really good. So I'm with you on that. I mentioned the HBO's The Outsider. I kept my HBO because I'm a cord cutter. I kept my little HBO subscription just a little longer because I wanted to see this. And I watched, there's two episodes out, and I watched them, excuse me, and pacing is a little slow, and it's moody, but I think they're building to something. And I love Ben Mendelsohn. I've loved him since Bloodline, and he was great in Rogue One as a villain. Well, not he, you know, and he was also very good in the last Batman movie too. So I like him. He's good. It's good to see him in this role. I don't like one thing. Excuse me a minute. Excuse me. I don't like one thing about it. They moved it out of Oklahoma. It's in Georgia.
Yeah, I read that. Which I don't like know that. Why they did that.
I don't either. But you know, it's kind of a relief, because if they'd done it in Oklahoma, everybody be talking like this or something. Folks, I'm from Oklahoma. Do I talk like that? No. But in every movie. Although, you know what? My last thing I was going to mention to you, pop culture wise, was Watchmen.
Oh yeah, it's on my list.
That took place in Tulsa, or takes place in Tulsa, and frankly, there's not a whole lot of super hick talky going on, and I like that. So you haven't seen that yet,
right? I haven't. It's getting such good buzz, but I haven't dipped in yet.
I hope they won't make any more. They're going to, I'm sure. But I think it was, I'm not going to say near perfect, but I think it was damn good, and I don't see it getting, I don't know. I just fear that it won't get any better. I think it really was a stunning piece of work, though. I really, really respect it. So, I love that. And all the people who are complaining about, there's the Phantom Menace folks who are complaining about, oh, it's woman-centered or African-American-centered or all these things. It's just, okay, it's like these people shoot themselves in the foot every time. Just when I start to listen to some of these dudes about, like, yeah, I mean, it's but I've realized I don't really agree with the Phantom Menace guys. And I want everybody, all my listeners, to be clear. I want to be clear about this, okay? What I don't like is bad writing.
Yeah.
And so on Star Trek Discovery, when they're clearly shoehorning things in to kind of suit an agenda, it's kind of clear, in my opinion, in places. Maybe I'm wrong, but I see it, and it, to me, it just looks like bad writing. Mm-hmm. That I don't like. Now, there's no bad writing in Watchmen. There's no bad writing. This is just people mad about this. I'm just like, you lost me here, because I don't see what the problem is, because it's centered on an African-American woman as the lead. This is not, I don't see that as an agenda. Now, if you watched, and you haven't seen it, so I'm just saying, there's a lot about Watchmen that certainly takes that perspective, and there's nothing wrong with that, because it's done well. It just drives me crazy, these Phantom Menace guys, because I for a while there, I was paying attention to a lot of these dudes on video on YouTube, and I was like, well, they got a point about this being not very good, because they drew me in because I don't like what they've done to Star Trek. I just don't. But then I kind of realized, I'm not sure we dislike this for the same reason.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what, you know, just to sidestep for a sec, just that's my issue with all reviews, but specifically just this poll of public opinion on pop culture and like the Star Wars movies, for example. Yeah, you have some legitimate gripes, but if most of your gripes are centered around things that have nothing to do with story, performance, or the technical aspects of making the movie or the TV show or writing the book, then I kind of am going to tune you out. You know what I mean? It doesn't really affect me. I'm there just to see or hear or understand a great story, have compelling characters that are performed well, and, you know, not have some kind of crazy J.J. Abrams lens flare all over everything. But but you got to put up with a little bit of that, I guess.
Yeah. You and I are in complete agreement on that. I've just kicked myself a little bit for kind of being drawn into some of those things. Yeah. It's in my opinion, it's somewhat misguided. It's overly negative, and if I'm being very candid, it's not honest. Mm-hmm. And so not all of it, but there's just some big actors in that side. I don't mean actors like acting actors. I mean there are actors in that movement that I have to question some of their motivations, but not all of them. Not all of them. Okay. Right. Before I get, you know, attacked by those folks, I better shut up. So, hey, we're going to have to start winding down here, but any other things we haven't covered here, do you want to throw in here real quick about the year?
I'm like 90% of the rest of North America. I love The Mandalorian this year.
I haven't seen it.
Oh, yes. It's a throwback to the feel of the original Star Wars movie, in my opinion, a lot of it. Not the outer space stuff, but this the stuff on Tatooine, like the Western type feel of the first act of that movie.
I love that stuff.
And it's just really well done. It's very simple and straightforward. There's not a whole lot. You know, you go to a Star Wars movie and there's, you know, 15 different whizzing things happening. And there's lots of great special effects in The Mandalorian, but it's just mostly, I think it's 8 episodes. It's just each episode is kind of like its own TV Western episode from 1965. Like, it's just really, really straightforward and compelling. And I dig it.
You're really trying to get me to chump off and get that subscription, aren't you? Because you're pushing all of my buttons.
I do not work for Disney, but I think that one you'd dig. We'll talk offline more about it, and maybe I'll send you a gift card for it or something.
Thanks, pal. That's great. I'll figure something out. It's just my wife sees one more paid service. I know. She's like, why did we cut the cord?
I know. And that's we could mention that about 2019. The trends in 2019. I mean, how many subscription services are there for content, music, and movies? And I mean, if you get into reading novels on your devices, your iPads or your Kindles. I mean, we're spending a lot of money on downloads of things. And if you're subscribing to them, you know, the majority of the big streaming services, it's, you know, $100 a month, you know, $6.99 here, $8.99 here, $14.99 here, adds up. That's kind of a weird trend.
Yeah, it's like they're all laughing at us, you know. They're like, well, they think they're so smart, and look at that. But also, too, like, I have a Fire Stick, and then you can add all these apps for all these different – there's all these different services out there that are free, some of them, and you just watch cartoons commercials, and you're fine. But anyway, it's nuts. The world's – I think you're right. That you nailed it. That's a big, big buzz for 2019, I think. I don't know. I think it's such a tumultuous year in so many ways. The Me Too movement, the you know, the pendulum swing of certain cultural norms. And I'm not criticizing it. I think a lot of this was very good. I think it's interesting. I think that there's a reaction in society visible through our entertainment and our culture of what's going on here. And it's fascinating to watch. And if it helps some people get a voice that didn't before, I'm all for it. If it helps some people who were suffering get their shot, I'm all for it. And if it makes thoughtful people more thoughtful about their actions, behavior, and attitudes and thoughts about certain things, all the more. I know that everything about this movement has really changed the way I think about the opposite sex, not completely, but just things that I was brought up on. Talking about James Bond, you know, you're brought up on James Bond.
Yeah.
And women are fairly objectified. Everything is so complicated, but it's been a hell of a couple of years on so many levels. And then throwing in, you know, the political angle, and 2020 is going to be a rough year. It's going to be rough.
Yes, it is. That could be a whole other podcast episode.
Any last things before we wrap up here, buddy?
What are you hoping to, speaking of 2020, I know we're about 2 weeks in. Ish, what are you hoping to do yourself, content wise and creative wise?
I'm excited because I'm in the middle of writing the next John Pilot mystery. I'm very happy with where it's going so far, and I'm having more fun with it. I'm gonna confess to a little bit of inspiration from Knives Out. I am working on trying to make the mystery more of a mystery, maybe a little less. There's a lot about John Pilot, of course, and his issues and all the whole cast of characters. But I want the mystery to be a little more of a mystery, and so I can not. I feel sometimes a bit of a fraud saying that these are mysteries because there are mysterious things happening. But I don't think it. I don't think you have to be Encyclopedia Brown to figure out who did what usually. So, what about you, my
There's
friend?
A deep cut right there.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. I can't wait to read it. I'm working on a new book that is a piece of fiction based on an idea, really a whole story that I've had in my head for about 25 years.
Holy
since
God.
I was quite a young man. And I'm excited. I've been excited to write it for quite some time, and I just had other things that were more interesting. Not to say that this isn't interesting to me, but you always kind of drive the shiniest car in the garage, if that metaphor helps. Whatever's new and shiny is more likely to get my attention. So this older idea has kind of waited, but it's interesting because it's kind of a quasi sequel to two different types of stories that were unrelated until this book will be written, if that makes sense. So it's kind of going to appeal probably to anybody who has liked kind of some of my scary stuff I've written, but also some of the genre stuff that I've written. And my goal is to, I wrote a book about 3 or 4 years ago that hasn't actually yet been released for a myriad of reasons I won't get into. And it was a new attempt for me. I was trying to write something really, really fast-paced and that was just very genre-driven and didn't pause a lot to kind of look at the world around and philosophize on it a bit, which I sometimes do. And I think that book, you've read it, Alex, was a pretty good success that way. And so I'm wanting to get back into that style of just every single paragraph, every single sentence is plot. And just really moves fast and just spares no expense in getting the story going and moving. I think it's probably because I've been frustrated with a lot of the fiction I've been reading that really pauses and really explains everything that you don't necessarily need. And I don't necessarily want to write a screenplay, but I want to read and write stories that are, a lot of story. Just go, 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 go. And this brings me back to what we didn't quite chat about, which was Stephen King's new one for 2019, which was The Institute. I don't know if you've read it.
No.
I read the first third of it, and it's good writing because he's the writer of our times, but story-wise, almost nothing happens. Really, almost nothing discernible happens, in my view, in the first 150 pages of this book, which I think is 800, 900 pages. And I'm just like, I'm not sure I can commit to this. So I put it aside, which I've never actually done with a Stephen King book.
And I take no glee in hearing things like that.
I take no glee in saying them.
Yeah,
I don't know. I could have avoided saying it, I guess.
well, it's but I mean, the guy
He
knows what he's
doesn't
doing.
care about my he doesn't care about my level of kindness.
I don't think he cares about necessarily what anybody thinks about his writing, and I don't mean that like I don't care. I just think he's like, look, I'm me. I'm gonna write what I want to do. Eh, good on him. But yeah, that's a common refrain though. It's just
I liked it better than season two. Now, keeping in mind that Stephen King has little to do with the series, right?
Right.
They used his books as a basis. I thought they used the books better in season three than they did in season two. I thought season two, even the second book, am I getting this right, or is it the third book that they used primarily for the basis of season two?
They went, yeah,
Yeah,
they,
they
well,
flip-flopped,
they,
I think.
yeah, they flipped flopped.
Yeah, there was stuff in the third book that went kind of paranormal, not even kind of, quite paranormal, when we had already established in book one that this was a kind of a gumshoe detective type of a story, which I was really enthralled with. The first book,
Oh,
fabulous. The
yeah.
first season of the show, fabulous. Made me want to keep going. And then as it felt like Stephen King kind of fell back on some of his old tropes. And I'm not sure why, if he didn't trust himself to write a straight detective gumshoe type story that was grounded in reality, so he had to go to like his horror and paranormal elements. I'm not sure why, but that bugged me. And of course, so season two used that. Now season three, which came out in 2019, and I quite liked because it kind of went back to the more grounded stuff. Now it kind of fell flat
Right.
for me again by the end of the season. I felt like the buildup was worth more than the payoff by the final episode. Without giving it away.
Yeah, and the villains, the antagonists, well, I'll say this about season three. You'll never look at Captain Janeway the same way again. Oi. Oi.
It was an interesting performance because I don't think that character, if that character's in the book, it's minor compared to how they used her in the series.
Right. I like 3. It was return to form compared to 2, the second season, but I think you're right. He nailed it there. And again, King didn't have much to do with the series, but I think Harry Treadaway is in the new Picard series, by the way.
Yes.
He's the villain. Yeah. So that'll be interesting to see. So I enjoyed that. And TV wise, there's just real quick, there's a show that started in 2019 that I kind of watched, and I'm going to completely confess, I started watching because I have a massive crush on this actress, but Cobie Smulders has a show called Stumptown, which is based on a popular graphic novel where she is this accidental private eye kind of skip trace type person, and it's actually a fairly entertaining show. Don't know if you get that up your way, but I enjoyed it.
I'm not even sure what service or network is that on.
It's on ABC here in America.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't know.
I'll get that somewhere.
Yeah. It's called Stumptown. Mm-hmm. And I'm not telling you it's the greatest thing ever, but I enjoy her performance in it. And it's all right. I don't watch a lot of what we would call network shows anymore. But so every now and then when I find one that looks interesting. Now, I tried to watch one the other day called on Fox, just because of the concept, kind of a modern day Western concept about a guy who was the head of the sheriff's posse in L.A. County. He's a rogue. Doesn't go by the book. He's got his own code. And anyway, the sheriff kicks off, dies, and there's a rule that if the sheriff dies, in a certain way or whatever, that the senior member of his posse could take over as interim sheriff. And so there you go. That's your show. I couldn't get through 15 minutes of the dialogue. It was it's so bad. Stephen Dorff is playing the character, and it's all just so bad. If you're going to do a modern take on the Western, it's not enough just to throw in some tropes and, shove a ramrod up somebody's back and have them, no. Sorry, I'm not making a lot of sense, but it was terrible. It made me miss Justified, but even Longmire, which, by the way, a series of great books that had a pretty promising start as a TV show that kind of went off the rails the last season or two. It got really soap opera-y. So just funny. Although, probably like you, I would just kill if somebody would take one of my books and ruin it on TV.
Where do I sign?
Yeah, I once said that. I said, you want all of the John Pilate? You want John Pilate in perpetuity? How many zeros are on that check? You got him. Yeah. Bye, John.
Yeah, exactly. But this comes back to what I was saying earlier with the reboots and the rehashes and the retreads. There's so much good content that movie makers and the television industry could be tapping. There are so many great indie authors and established traditional authors putting out really great, interesting, non-cliched stories that are, looking at new types of characters and new types of stories. There's so many things that Hollywood could be buying up for a reasonable rate and adapting them for the screen. John Pilate, but other.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Oh, God. No, I was thinking of you. There is the piece you mentioned that you're kind of going back that direction now. And folks, all I can say is I've been privileged to read this book that Jason wrote. I don't know what you're going to do with it, by the way, buddy. But and it's not for me to tell that story. But I hope someday the rest of the world gets to see it because it's one of the best things I've ever read. And it's a crime that it's not only not out yet, but it's not published yet. But also because I think it would be a hell of a movie or a series. I mean, it's so good.
Well, thanks. I'm attempting to catch lightning in a bottle twice with the next one to kind of pace and present a completely different type of story, but in the same kind of a package with that kind of movement of a television script or of a movie script, I think.
Oh. I love it. I can't wait.
Cool. Well, kind words. Thank you.
If you need a beta reader, you know who to call.
Oh, you know.
Well, yeah. Talking. And I got a nice review for Pilot Shadow. And what you said there about how it's there are things that are not cliched stuff. And but anyway, part of the review that really just warmed my heart, there's everybody who reads the book knows John Pilate goes to a therapist, and he needs therapy. He's got issues and all this stuff. And she's like, this was not your typical cop or lawman or detective who's too macho to go to therapy kind of thing. This guy goes to therapy, and then it's written in such a way where therapy is viewed as being helpful, and you know, and all that. And I was like, yes, thank you, yes. I'm not gonna write some macho idiot who is not gonna, you know, I'm gonna just tell it like I see it. So anyway, I think that's true. And there's so many other stuff, so many other books out there, and so many other great authors. In fact, I've been talking to a fellow country person, a country woman of yours, she's.
Was it Colby Smulders?
I wish it was Colby Smulders. No, it wasn't. But she's working on some new stuff, and she's trying to get me a speaking berth at a writer's conference out that direction, which I want to talk to you about offline. And she's talking about the same thing. She goes, you know, there's just so many things. She's trying both tracks, traditional and indie, and she's thinking of trying one more time to go traditional. And I just said, well, you know, your mileage may vary, but it's not getting any easier for traditional, and even if you get in traditional, the deals aren't always great and all that kind of thing. But I understand the desire to get in there, because you probably have a better shot of getting picked up for TV or a theater or movies or something if you are traditional rather than indie. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I would think that's probably true. I can probably count on one hand with five fingers the number of indies that I've heard of that have had actually anything make it to screen.
Or just, I mean, I know of a couple of indies who at least have sold some things, you know, but they were optioned, sure, which, yep, hey, you get paid, but it didn't get made. But that's actually not unusual, apparently, in Hollywood. Tons, yep, of stuff. My own cousin had some stuff optioned years ago by DreamWorks. It never got made, but he got a nice check. So, hey.
Oh, wow.
Okay, so, you know, unless I'm missing anything else, I'll just, we've had a great discussion here, my gosh, but.
We always do. We always do.
Clock
love
on the
it.
Wall here, but it's been a great couple episodes. 2019, mixed bag, but a lot of good stuff. 2020, probably same, and I'm looking forward to it. Jason, I want to have you back, and I want to get in Eden Bailey back, too. Maybe we can all three do our little thing coming up this year, but lots of episodes ahead. And how do people go check out your work and buy your wonderful Dovetail Cove series?
Well, if somebody's interested in checking out my work, probably the easiest way is to go to any of the online bookstores, whether that be the Apple bookstore or Amazon, or, you know, really any of them, and just type in my name, which is Jason McIntyre. If you want to learn specifically more about me, you can go to thefarthestreaches.com, and, you know, find me on social media, on Twitter and Facebook. Just type in my name and up I will come for you.
And that's McIntyre, right?
Correct.
Okay, yeah. But I'll put a link in the show notes, because that's kind of how I am. Great. And of course, folks, you know, also you can find me at pilotscross.com or mgopod.com or on the Twitter or on the Facebook. I'm everywhere. It's a wonder I get any writing done, because I'm always on that stupid stuff. But I am out there and you can find me. And of course, there'll be links in the show notes for that kind of thing. And if you haven't picked up Pilot's Shadow just yet, you ought to do it. I'm hot and heavy on getting the next full-scale novel out this year. So you'll want to be primed and ready and understand what's going on with John Pilate before we get to that new Pilate's Blank. There's always a Pilate something, so it's Pilate's Blank. I actually, Jason, I was sitting down to write the new one, and I always put like a, you know, you put a placeholder title. I don't know if you do, but I do, for sure. Yeah, so I almost put Pilate's Blank, just like a blank, you know, line, yep, you know, just. But I didn't. I came up with a title, is not going to make it. It's not going to work, but it'll do for now. My brother, so good to speak with you, and I look forward to speaking to you many more times this year on the show, and just thanks so much.
Well, as always, thanks for having me. It's always a blast.
Well, again, you know how to find Jason. Look in the show notes, and you can find me as well. And until next time, keep reading.
Hey, Mysterious Going On fans. Are you a fan of live music? If so, you'll want to check out my podcast, Trading Fours. I'm your host, Jamie Green. Trading Fours is a fun, casual conversation with Kansas City musicians. Join me as we find out what makes Kansas City such a special place for live music. You can find my podcast, Trading Fours, wherever you subscribe to your favorites.
A little flexibility can go a long way. By refinancing your new or used auto loan with PenFed, you can lower your monthly payments for more flexibility in your budget. You can even schedule your first payment for up to 60 days from the date of your refinance. Calculate how much you could save at PenFed.org/autorefi or call 1-800-247-5626 to apply. Membership is open to everyone. To receive any advertised product, you must become a member of PenFed, insured by NCUA. It's a great time to get a great deal on a new car when you get approved for an auto loan from PenFed. Our Powered by True Car rates are as low as 1.39% APR on new vehicles. Finance for a longer term to lower your monthly bill. Plus, take up to 60 days to schedule your first payment. Join PenFed and together we'll keep you moving forward. Anyone can apply. Visit PenFed.org/auto or call 1-800-247-5626. To receive any advertised product, you must become a member of PenFed, insured by NCUA.